When AC/DC penned their song Highway to Hell in 1979, it was a reference to the long Western America highways stretching hundreds of flat miles into the sunset, and a recognition of their hard partying life on the road as famous musicians. Yes, it referred to hell, but mostly kind of as an illustration of their lifestyle. Billy Joel's song, Only the Good Die Young, didn't include the word hell, but mocked it nonetheless with this stanza. And they say there's a heaven for those who will wait. Some say it's better, but I say it ain't. I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints. The sinners are much more fun. The impact of those songs was to train their listeners to think that the idea of hell is silly, to mock it, to ridicule it, to minimize it as something either silly or just absurd. And while roughly 60% of Americans still believe in a literal hell, the percent drops significantly when you start talking to those who are 34 and under. The interesting thing, though, is that the songs shaped and formed the thinking, or helped shape and form the thinking of their parents instead of them, because they preceded them by a generation. But what we see is that it impacted their parents, who passed down beliefs that hell's really not all that important or doesn't even exist. And then you add to that, as we mentioned this morning, the reality of minimal weekly church attendance. Only about 10% of Americans went to a church worship today, meaning, as somebody pointed out to me last Wednesday, that about 2,700 people here in Bola and Litchfield and in Grayson County went to church today. So it's likely that the number of people who believe in hell will continue to decrease, especially as pop culture ridicules and makes fun of it, making it appealing rather than repulsive. Now, hopefully everyone here tonight believes in the reality of hell, knows it's not a place of laughter, and has gotten off that highway. However, it's not a popular topic, and it's not a pleasant topic. In my limited experience, preachers seldom preach on it. I don't know all. Obviously, I haven't sat in every pew and every church, or listened to every sermon online. So I don't know how many people preach about hell. I did download a few this week and listen to them, so they're out there. But it's just not something that we talk about much, and it's not something that I can recall ever actually preaching explicitly on this subject. So what that tells me is that our understanding of hell may be more hearsay from outside sources rather than a clear and accurate understanding of doctrine from the Bible itself. And that's clearly the case for our culture in general. Otherwise, why would they come up with songs like this? And so tonight's lesson from 2 Peter 2, verse 4, is called Highway to Hell. And it comes from verse 4, where it says, "For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment." And so it mentions it very explicitly there in the text. And so what we're going to do tonight is we're just going to look at four things. We're going to look at the who, the what, the when, the where, and the when of hell, because it is the topic being discussed here in a great deal here in 2 Peter chapter 2. And so first of all, let's look at the who in the form of who will be sent there. Who will go to there? And when we look at 2 Peter chapter 2, what we find is that it's a veritable who's who of who's in hell. When you see all of the lists here that we're going to look at tonight. First of all, what we see is that it begins with false prophets and teachers. In verse 1, they're referenced to people who are bringing swift destruction upon themselves. And then in verse 2, it refers to those who follow them, that would follow in their footsteps. They will be going there with their false teachers. Then in verse 4, Peter adds angels that we read from just a moment ago. Then it's followed by the ancient world in the days of Noah in verse 5. And then it's Sodom and Gomorrah in verse 6. And then it's the unrighteous who indulge the flesh and despise authority in verses 9 and 10. And then it's Balaam and those who follow his path of greed there in verse 15, and ended with the once saved people who fell away in verse 20 that we talked about this morning. This morning, I want you to look at verse 20. This morning we looked at verse 21. Tonight, I want us to look at verse 20. He has a little bit more to say about this. He says, "For if after they have escaped the defilements," these are people who have been saved, "the defilements of the world by the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them and are overcome. The last state has become worse for them than the first." And so what he's talking about here is there were a group of people, the Christians who had, are people who are lost, they were sinners, they were saved, they became Christians, the followers of Christ, and then they fell away. And he says their second condition is worse than the first condition, which was lost. So it's not an idea of they'll be in heaven and things will be bad for them in heaven with the once saved, always saved doctrine of the world, but that they will be in hell and it'll be worse. And we'll explain why in just a moment. Now, in case somebody says, well, that's Peter. Peter was being petulant here. He was in a bad mood and he was just ripping into people and false teachers. Well, it's not just Peter. Jude says this many things as well about those who are lost and bound for hell. In fact, if you'll turn over to Jude, this comes right before the book of Revelation, just a couple of pages over in your New Testament. Jude adds unbelievers to this category. Verse 5. "Now I desire to remind you, though you know all things once for all, that the Lord, after saving a people out of the land of Egypt, subsequently destroyed those who did not believe." So Jude expands on those who are lost. The people who came out of Egypt that didn't trust God, didn't obey God, didn't believe in God, didn't have faith, they were destroyed. So that's the idea of unbelievers are added to those who will suffer this destruction. And then in verses 14 through 16, he expands it even further to include just a bunch of different people. Verse 14 of Jude, he says, "It is also about these men that Enoch, in the seventh generation from Adam, prophesied, saying, Behold, the Lord came with many thousands of his holy ones to execute judgment upon all and to convict all the ungodly of their ungodly deeds, which they have done in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him." So you got ungodly four times in that verse. And then he adds in verse 16, "These are grumblers, finding fault." Ever do any grumbling, fault finding? This passage might make you want to have to rethink that. "Following after their own lusts, they speak arrogantly, flattering people for the sake of gaining an advantage." And so this expands the category. This expands the category of those who are being cast into hell, to the unbelievers and the ungodly. It's a very, very broad category of people. So you got Peter and Jude. But as if that was not enough, Jesus, who spoke more about hell than anyone else, expanded the list to include those who hinder others and are lawless. Look over in Matthew chapter 13. Look at Matthew chapter 13. Matthew 13, he says this here, and this is in the parable of the tares and the wheat and his explanation of that in verses 41 and 42. He says, talking about at the end of time, he said, "The Son of Man will send forth his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all stumbling blocks." That's somebody that makes other people sin. "And those who commit lawlessness, and will throw them into the furnace of fire. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And so he expands the list of who will be in hell to those who cause other people to sin. And in another passage that might make us want to think carefully about how we conduct ourselves is Matthew chapter 25. In Matthew 25, he includes the uncaring. People just don't care about other people. Talking about the sheep and the goats, we had made a joke with Becky earlier tonight about the sheep are on this side and the goats are on this side. But from my perspective, the sheep are on this side and the goats are on this side. We've got a dilemma here. Anyway, no, they're all sheep in here as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, so in verses 41 and 46, he says this. "Then he will also say to those on his left, Depart from me, accursed ones, into the eternal fire which has been prepared for the devil and his angels. So now he says they're accursed. Well, who's accursed? That's got to be awful, evil, wicked people, right? Verse 42, for I was hungry, and you gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger, and you did not invite me in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. Sick, and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they themselves also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry, or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not take care of you? Then he will answer them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. These will go away into eternal punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. That's a very, very big expansion of those who will go into hell. All of these passages should make us think very carefully about how we approach God and the service that we give to Him. And in an odd way, Steve hasn't gotten there yet, but I know he's going to get there soon. Matthew chapter 7 in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus may have been the source of this phrase, the highway to hell, because of what he says in verse 13. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it. So in a roundabout way, Jesus may have been the source of this phrase, highway to hell. But that takes us now to what is hell? What is hell? Let's talk a little bit about what it is. Back in Matthew 13, let's go back to Matthew 13 and verse 14. There in Matthew 13 in verse 42, he calls it a furnace of fire where there will be gnashing of teeth. And where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now, weeping, we can understand, right? Everybody knows what weeping is. You know what it's like to weep, be sad about something and just tears gushing out. But what is gnashing of teeth? What does it mean, gnashing of teeth? Well, it's very simple. It's that grimace that we make when we're in pain or when we're aggravated or we're frustrated and we just grind our teeth and we look. That's what gnashing of teeth is. Locking our teeth down, maybe because of extreme pain or suffering or in anger. That's what it is. And so why is hell a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth? It's because it's misery. Jesus called it an eternal fire in Matthew 25, verse 41. And eternal punishment in verse 46 there in Matthew 25. Jesus called it an unquenchable fire in Mark 9, verse 43. And he used Gehenna. In fact, this became the common use of that day, to use Gehenna, which is the valley south of Jerusalem, which was the garbage dump. And you may not remember this, but in the Old Testament, some of the kings of Israel would offer sacrifices to Molech and offer their children in these sacrifices, and they used the Valley of Hinnom, which is that valley south of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was on a pretty steep hill, and down in that valley below, there was a creek that ran through there, and they would go down and they would offer sacrifices and burn their children. Josiah came along and destroyed all of that and made it into a garbage dump. And it became a garbage dump and where a place where fires burned all the time. And so it became the symbol of hell itself, the place of punishment for those who were wicked. And fire, obviously, we know, is a universal symbol of absolute destruction and severe anguish. Anybody here ever been burned enough to have skin grafts? Be thankful you haven't. When I was about 11, didn't have to have skin grafts, but I was 11 years old, and my parents had a bunch of people over after church, and they had a big, like a 32-cup pot of coffee. We were a coffee-drinking family. And the knob on the lid of that thing was just tall enough that when I reached up and pulled the cabinet open to get a glass, it spilled it on my stomach. It hurt a lot. Blistered up, but fine, but no scarring or anything like that. But it's painful. So if you've been burned, you know it hurts, and you don't want to be burned. So why would you ever want to go to a place that the description of that place is eternal fire, unquenchable fire? You wouldn't want to go there. Do you remember in 9/11? How many? Some of you don't, but most of you remember, are old enough to remember 9/11, and the pictures of the people jumping out of the buildings at 1,000 feet and more to escape fire. Falling to their death was worse, or not as bad, as staying there and getting burned to death. That's how awful it is. And so we know it's just awful. It's not a place where we would want to go or a thing that we would want to be a part of. Turn over to Revelation chapter 19. In Revelation 19 and 20 and 21, five times it's referred to as a lake of fire. I want us to read that. Just read these verses just to familiarize ourselves with them. Revelation chapter 19 and in verse 20. And he says, "And the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet who performed the signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire which burns with brimstone." Then in verse 10 of chapter 20 it's called, "They were thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone." And verse 10, and verse 14, "Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire." This is the second death, the lake of fire. And verse 15, "If anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire." And then in verse 8 of chapter 21, "But for the cowardly and the unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." The lake of fire. It's just got to be awful to even think about being thrown in that. It's not something that we like to talk about. Now let's go back to 2 Peter chapter 1. Chapter 2, and in verse 1 and 3, he uses the word destruction. And destruction is from a word that means to be cut off, completely severed. And what that means is that there's a severance, there's a separation, there's a division that takes place. So this destruction is not annihilation in the sense of us of being no longer existing, but of being separated and cut off from God. That's what hell is. That's how he's describing it. It's an eternal separation rather than eternal elimination or annihilation. Then in verse 4, it's called pits of darkness, reserved for judgment, for the judgment of condemned sinners. Sodom and Gomorrah were reduced to ashes in a visual, physical demonstration of the fires of hell. And as a possible explanation of the angry gnashing of teeth, the once saved fell away. Who fell away are worse off than if they had never been saved in the first place. Why? And I told you I'd get back to this a little earlier. They know what they lost. They know what they had access to, and they know what they turned their back on and walked away from and lost. And that would make them feel it even worse because they knew they didn't have to be there. Now, even though hell is described using terminology such as fire and flame, I don't think it's meant to be thought of as only a physical place. Hell is described as a place of torment, which is deep mental anguish, not torture, which is the physical pain. And it was deep mental anguish that was intended for spiritual beings. Matthew 25:41, it was made for the devil and his angels, spiritual beings who did not have corporal bodies, physical bodies. So what that tells us, or at least it tells me, and what I think is, and what I've read from most people, is that hell is described as an eternity of conscious guilt, or conscious, guilty, shameful separation from God. Because when we think about hell, when we think about where we are and where we are not, we are separated from God and all forms of goodness. And it's worse than a purely physical place or a mere fiery inferno. It's the place where sinners suffer alone and lament what they could have had by faith. That's worse than actual fire. Yeah. So I don't think we could use the idea and think of it in terms of a physical, actually physical fire, but to represent the most awful thing we can think of, and that is to be when we would be separated from God. And that leads us to the next question, and that is, where is hell? Well, Well, obviously it's not south of Jerusalem in the Valley of Hinnom. The Bible simply does not tell us where, so let's not get hung up on seeking a place on a map or a general or geographical location. Just know that hell is a literal place of real torment for all eternity, and make sure you don't go there. Other than that, don't have much to say about where it might be. It's just I don't know where it is. But I do know I don't want anybody to go there, and I don't want to go there. And that brings us to a last question. When will the lost be cast into hell? And this, too, is not as clear as we would like. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus indicate that they both immediately went to the realm of the dead when they died. But the rich man found himself in Hades in torment, while Lazarus was being comforted in Abraham's bosom. That's in Luke chapter 16, and it was particularly verse 23. And what that tells us is that at death, we immediately enter either punishment or comfort. Our eternal destiny is determined before we die. Or at death, it is settled. It's determined. There's no going back. And Revelation 20, verse 14, we pointed out earlier, says that at the final judgment, death and Hades are cast into the lake of fire, and that judgment is called the second death. And so that's where is hell. As I was working on this lesson, I realized that this is just not a pleasant topic. It's not something that we enjoy talking about. And in fact, it seems like there's almost an antipathy toward talking about it at all. Because, well, we don't want to scare people into becoming Christians. Well, let me ask you a question. Don't answer it out loud. How many of you became Christians because you didn't want to go to hell? And then as you grew and matured, you learned not only do you not want to go to hell, you want to go to the opposite place of hell. And so why would we who feel that way when we become Christians become upset when it's talked about? Because there may be somebody else who needs to know there's a place you just don't want to go. And obviously, we can't answer every question. I don't know the answer to every question. Don't pretend to know the answer to every question. And so we're just going to end there with these four questions. The who, the what, the where, and the when. And so let's wrap up as we draw our lesson to a conclusion with this important question. Is hell your eternal destiny, or are you among those God graciously rescues? It's an important question. We're in 2 Peter. Let's go back to verses 4 through 9. And I'm not going to read the text, but I just want to point out some things here. First of all, he says in verse 4, this is kind of a passage that's building to a point. He starts off in verse 4, for if God did not spare, and he talks about angels. In verse 5, and did not spare the ancient world. Verse 6, and he condemned the citizens of the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. So it's pointing out of God's judgment. God did not spare in judgment. So it's pointing us to and making us think about judgment. But then he says in verse 7, if he rescued, this is where he's going with this. If he rescued Lot, as he described here in verses 7 and 8. But then the conclusion is in verse 9. The Lord knows how to rescue the godly. That means the Lord knows how to rescue you. So whatever and wherever hell is, you do not have to go there. None of us do. What we do have to do to escape it is want to go to heaven. And he tells us how we can do that by believing in Jesus and repenting of our sins, confessing his name and being baptized. And then living a faithful life, pursuing the good things that we talked about this morning. And pursuing heaven itself. If we can help you do that tonight in any way, please come while we stand and while we sing.